Hello, everybody, and welcome to another episode of the WizWit Hockey Podcast. I am your host, Drew. With me today is my co-host,
Devin. Hey, everyone,
Devin.
What's up?
And unfortunately, Ryan couldn't be here with us because it's the holidays. He's moving. He's getting married in literally a week. So we got a guest today, our buddy Joe. Joe, how are you doing?
Doing well. What's going on, guys?
Good. So we're a little late to the party here, but some things have happened in the Flyers world. And that's that we sent down Phil Veroni. Yeah, it's a shame.
Huge news.
Yeah, but on a serious note, Dave Haxtell, you get the fuck out of here. You're fired. Yeah, so Dave Haxtell's fired, and we're all happy.
It's a real joyous time to be a fan.
I feel like a weight has been lifted off of my shoulders.
Dev, I owe you an apology.
Why?
Because for the past two games, the Flyers
I wasn't wrong. I just forgot about Haxtell.
Right, there's that delay. There's
That'll
that buffer
fun
zone until Haxtell got fired. Yeah, so right now, Scott Gordon is the interim coach, and I like to say interim because they say to the end of the year, and we don't know if that means calendar year or
season. Oh, I never even thought of that.
Nobody's really...
I didn't either.
Oh, yeah. Do you think Chuck was being coy?
I think he was being coy
because... He's going to be the coach for the
rest
of the year? Did he say year or season?
Yeah. He said year.
Oh, my God.
Asshole.
He specifically said the verb...
The verb,
the
oh, my
verb,
God.
The noun, the year.
Wow.
Said year. So the I was gonna say verbiage.
Is it a
semantics?
Noun?
I don't know.
A unit
of
time.
It's got to be a noun.
I think it's a noun.
It's a thing.
Yeah, it's
I guess.
A noun. Pronoun?
No.
I mean, now you're going above my education level.
Well, anyways, he did specifically say a year, and the rumor is that Quenneville didn't want to sign with any team, let alone the Flyers, until after the holidays, because he actually wanted to spend time with his family for once during the Christmas season.
And he's getting paid.
If Quenneville said that, and then that little Easter egg, too, I mean, they kind of line up. That'd be really interesting.
Yeah, it's something to ponder on.
Yeah, I mean, there's kind of like three scenarios that happened with, I mean, we're going to get into more details about it, but like either the plan is to hire Method in the year, or like they're just going to try to hire him in the summer with everyone else trying to, or like they actually had him hired and they screwed it up.
Yeah.
True. Speaking of screwing it up, the way Dave Haxtell was fired was the most interesting couple of days on Twitter. Because coming off their Western Conference road trip, or I guess it wasn't all Western Conference, was it? Regardless, yeah, I'll get my point. Coming off the road trip, there is some little bit of a leak on Twitter. Who was it? Dave Isaac said it that Dave Haxtell had been fired. However, during that tweet, the Flyers were in the air.
Yeah, that
they. They were literally
on mayhem. People were getting like genuinely upset on Twitter, like full blown anger, like with the reports being called false or too early. Just like that was a crazy 24 hours.
It was funny because I was at my grandparents' house because like we go there like a couple weeks before Christmas to exchange gifts, and like they live in the Pine Barrens of New Jersey. Like I had no service. And like all I could get was text messages, and I was seeing like. We have our group chat, and I could see, like, everyone texting about it. So I thought it was, like, a done deal. Like, Quenneville was the coach. Like, me and my dad were, like, celebrating. We're, like, woo! We're, like, pumped. And then, like, I get in the car and, like, start to get towards civilization. And then, like, I start, like, playing with Twitter at red lights and stuff. I know that's not appropriate, but... And I was, like, oh, no. Oh, no, it's not true. And then, like, trying to, like, go back in time through, like, the chaos that was Twitter. It was pretty nuts.
I was kind of in the same boat where I was at work and I couldn't like I could only take glances at my phone from time to time and I saw the same group text and I thought it was a done deal. So I get home and I go on Twitter and I go to look for the official announcement from the Flyers. There wasn't one. And I immediately texted and said, "What happened here?" And then got filled in on the mayhem. The
chaos, Chris had a good breakdown of it.
Pandemonium.
It was like I forget what he said, but it was like three sentences. I was like, oh, okay.
Yeah. But, yeah, it was an interesting time to be a Flyers fan for a day. And then, of course, that was, Sunday? Monday he would officially get fired.
Yeah, but not until like noon. It was really hard for me to be productive at work.
Yeah, because he wasn't on the ice for practice. Nobody knew what was happening. There was no new face there on practice. It was an interesting little bit.
That had to be tough internally just to kind of clean that up. I mean, if they did have it in their head when they were on the plane, and then you just see all this stuff coming in through social media, and you're like, well, you know what? What do? We can't just land and tell them to catch a cab.
Can you imagine that plane ride as that tweet's being read and passed around throughout?
Oh, yeah, because they definitely have internet on the flyers. Yeah,
100%.
So, like...
Oh, they do. Like, there was no landing and go, wow, what did I miss? No, it was like, oh, it was being passed
That's
down.
That had to been the most awkward.
Could you imagine sitting, if somebody's, like, Konechny sitting next to Hackstall on the plane? Because you know Konechny's going to be on Twitter. And he just looks, and he sees that, and he looks over at Dave, and looks back down at his phone, look over at Dave. Look back
and he's like, damn, I'm going to get power play one time.
And, you know, the practice that would follow, there are a lot of happy faces on Tuesday morning's practice.
Yeah, everyone has had to be confused.
It was interesting. You know, I'm happy about it. Now, of course, Dave Haxtell's tenure with the Flyers, over 277 games played, they won 134. 101-42 with the losses and overtime losses, but that's what 143. So 134 and 143, for argument's sake.
Not good at all. Especially with, I mean, at least maybe not the talent pool, I guess, but the ambitions. I just think it's underachieving, to say the least, and underachieving for longer than anyone thought possible to allow someone to continue to just sit there with nothing more than meh.
The Flyers roster was like, it was flawed during that time. Like, they had issues every year, but I mean, they did have a couple years of really good goaltending from Mason and Neuwirth before Mason was discarded and Neuwirth broke. So, like, I don't know, man. I feel like they should have had at least a little bit more success.
For the definition of the entire journey has been the word underachieving. And it's not that he's had, you know, he doesn't have the Maple Leafs roster, he doesn't have Tampa Bay's roster, but at the end of the day, it's finishing under 500 the way we did with, I don't know, it's just too much for too long, and I'm just ecstatic that it's over.
I keep seeing people say, like, he made the playoffs 2 out of 3 years, and it's, but like, it's
sick.
Everyone keeps, like, leaving out the fact that they got absolutely destroyed in those rounds.
But he's won a third of the games he's played in the playoffs.
That's terrible.
And he's been destroyed in the playoffs.
I thought you were saying that as a positive thing for a second, Drew. And I was like, wait, what?
No.
Like, what?
God, no. No, that was the argument against the he made the playoffs 2 out of 3 years. That
Well, if you win a third of your games, you just lose every series. That's all.
You never win a series. Yeah. That works out.
So the interim, Scott Gordon. Did you know he was a head coach at one point?
I know that.
Yeah, he coached 2 seasons and 17 games.
Well, it was the Islanders.
It was the Islanders. So
yeah,
bad.
I get it, but I mean, like,
it was, well, they would have gotten what's his name with one of those picks, right? 2008, 2009, 9-10. That wasn't that.
Yeah, Tavares.
One of them. No, but wouldn't they have gotten Tavares?
I don't
those
know,
years?
But I do know that, like, when he was at one point in time, he was like a rising star amongst, like, the next coaching hires, and then it didn't work out with the Islanders, but, like, it never works out with the Islanders.
Yeah,
so.
you can't blame him for not just hopping into the Islander organization and flipping a switch.
Yeah, and I wonder, he wasn't the coach when they made the playoffs, was he? No.
No, they never made the playoffs under Scott Gordon. However, after that first year is when they drafted.
Yeah, so he was walking into a rebuilding situation, right? So yeah.
Correct, yes. Yeah,
I can't even remember again, who was on the Islanders team before Tavares.
Andrew McDonald was.
That's true.
He was. So he had 2.25 years with the Islanders, and then he was an assistant in Toronto for 3 years, and then he became the head coach of the Flyers.
So
this would have been his fourth year as the coach of the Phantoms, and of course he gets the midseason replacement.
I've been kind of thinking, like, if the whole Quenneville thing doesn't work out, I don't think I would mind Scott Gordon being the backup
option. I think for sure. What was the last time this kind of happened to us? John Stevens did it.
Yeah. What, when we fired a coach midseason?
Well, and then I brought up the Phantoms coach. That was John Stevens.
Yeah, because Berube wasn't a Phantoms coach, was he?
No. He was an assistant.
So, because the last coach we fired was Lavi.
So,
right. No, well, Berube.
Well,
yeah. Well, I think wasn't it like his contract ran out? We didn't like renew it. Yeah.
Yeah. So the interesting thing about Scott Gordon, he was actually a goalie. Did you guess?
No, that's I love that though.
Yeah, he played. He played 3 years in Boston College. Played 7 years in the AHL. Played 3 seasons in the ECHL. He did play 2 seasons, and when I say two seasons, I mean 23 games in the NHL for the Quebec Nordiques. And his stats were not good as a goalie, and that's why. But right after he finished his playing career, he went on to start coaching in the
IHL. That's weird. You don't really see too many former goalies coach.
94, 95. No, you don't. You don't. So, yeah, good for Scott Gordon. Of course, Ryan couldn't be with us this week, like I mentioned. But we did have him pre-record things. Yes, because technology can let us do that. So here's Ryan's thoughts on Dave Hextall.
Pretty hilarious how the whole thing went down with the tweets being sent out and then people being in a frenzy for, a day or, overnight. And then team finally firing him right before practice. That's is pretty funny. I'm sure Drew and Dev will go into depth on exactly how it all went down, but I, for one, found it pretty funny. And, yeah, you could feel bad for Dave Hextall, but I'll be honest, he's getting paid. He's still getting paid for all this. I don't care how, if it made him look bad for how it went down. It was just pretty funny. But when Scott Gordon took over, I have to say the team looks looks much more unified. One thing it felt like going into this year is, I mean, the team had really high expectations, and but the one thing it looked like, it just looked like, I mean, not only were they really playing bad systematically, and I mean, that's been something that's debated over the past couple of years is how well the system was working. But this year, it just seemed that they were just kind of dead in the water. They didn't look motivated. They didn't look like they cared. And while, yes, some of that's on the players, it's also up to your coach to be able to motivate your players. And it just seems like there'd be a time in the game where, yeah, the Flyers would start playing well, and then something bad would happen, a bad goal, a bad shift, and then from there, it wasn't able to get turned around. It just kind of went downhill from there. Like, once that first or second bad shift happened, the Flyers were dead in the water the rest of the game. And yeah, that's really on the coach. I mean, this team's talented, much more talented than it was last year, and the fact that they were doing as bad as they were doing for that long. I mean, somebody's got to be held accountable. He ultimately went, 134, 101, and 42, which is under 500 because, overtime losses just count as regular losses in my book. So, yeah, he lost more games than he won. His utilization of players was terrible. His lineup decisions were costly. I mean, he was putting guys out there at the end of games. You saw, like, Yuri Lotero with a one-goal lead with a minute left. In no situation, you should be using your best guys with a minute left. That's ultimately what's going to win you games, is your better guys. Obviously, you have your role players to come in and fill a certain role. But in prime time, in protecting a one-goal lead, that shouldn't be their role. That should be left to your best players. Dave Hextall was terrible at making those choices. In his lineup decisions, he consistently made pretty terrible ones. His defensive pairings were, I guess, were mediocre at best. I think the best defensive pairing he had was Ghost and Provorov, which was actually pretty good. But after that, I mean, his underutilization of Sanheim, his overutilization of Andrew McDonald, I mean, a player who was never held accountable for his actions. I think that's a big, one of the big things that cost him his job. Also he just always seemed to run his goalies into the ground too. He would play his goalies in back-to-back games. He would basically play them until they drop dead. And yeah, you could say that Hextall didn't really put him in a great position with his goalie choices, given that Brian Elliott was probably your best goalie coming off of surgery. So he went down. Supposedly he might be out for the rest of the season. Neuwirth, being who he is. Stolarz, who's also coming off surgery. Lyon, I mean, Lyon's fine, but he's not an NHL starter. And then a guy you picked up on waivers. But ultimately, once you start at the gig at a rhythm, like you've seen when we were running with Stolarz, and I believe Lyon was the backup then, he just played Stolarz until Stolarz got injured. And that's unacceptable for not only for giving your team a chance to win games, but also the development of your players. It's not good. Let's see. I wanted to talk about Scott real quick, Scott Gordon. I mean, the team looks much more motivated, and on Tuesday they played a complete game against the Red Wings, and then on Thursday against the Predators, they look a little shaky, I think, at one point in the second, and usually that would be like, oh, well, here it goes, like, Flyers are gonna get trampled from here on out, but they were able to take another step in the right direction after that, and the rest of the game went pretty well. Now, I like Scott's decision to what he does with the lineup. He practices with different lineups than he uses in games. Like, he keeps lines together that he knows are going to perform well, like, or keeps players together that he knows are going to perform well, like Giroux and Konechny, I think, were on a line, or Couturier and Giroux, and he'll keep them together in games, but in practice, it seems like he pairs them with other players, and I think it keeps not only the players on their feet, it's a little deceptive for the other team because they're not always going to know who and what the pairings are and the lineups are. But it also, like, if you're, you know, if you have to make a change on the fly, you can make that change based on what you saw in practice. It's a different way of thinking. I've never seen that kind of thinking before, and I don't know, I like it. But yeah, ultimately, I think at the end, Dave Hextall preached accountability. Didn't practice it or only practice it on certain players. Players didn't really respond well to that, nor could he get them motivated. And that's ultimately what I feel like got him fired. And I think it was a long time coming. But yeah, that's my thoughts.
Thanks, Ryan. We appreciate taking the time out of your busy schedule to give us that. We did forget to mention the drink game because he says a lot. He doesn't know how to hold a conversation by himself. But what you guys
he
think about
said at one point, and that made me laugh so much. He said AMAC was never held responsible for his actions, and it makes it sound like he's a murderer or something. Like, he was out killing people, and he was
that
never held
so
responsible
true,
for
though.
His actions.
He was killing the goaltending careers of many goalies.
I gotta laugh out of that. It was just like he said it too. He was like, you could feel like the frustration is that he's never held responsible for his actions.
He was given like, oh, well, I mean, he was a former captain. He's a veteran. And that's – Hextall just put so much weight on those things that he just, like, got a pass. And it was just – like, he's single-handedly is a reason. And, I mean, I'm going to get into this later when we talk about Carter, where I just didn't even want him here because I didn't want him to have to deal with stuff like that.
Yeah, no, I agree. And one of the things that Kush talks about a lot is accountability, and he didn't hold – many of the players accountable that should have been held accountable, but then
it wasn't even that he didn't hold them accountable. It was that he rewarded them. Like Kush mentioned that his roster decisions were like towards the end of games, holding on to leads. Like that's the most important situation in a game when you're holding on to a one goal lead with a minute left. And repeatedly the guys that were out there, Andrew McDonald, Dale Weiss, Yori Laterra, back in the day, Chris Vandevelde, like, what? Why? Like, why are these – like, these guys are so clearly not your best players. Like, I don't care what – like, even if you're, like, a old-fashioned eye test guy, like, they're slow. They're not good.
Yeah. Even if you're an eye test guy, you can tell they're not good.
Which?
And Kush did go into a lot of the player usage, and I want to talk about this, is the killing of goalies by Dave Hextall. Because – now, Neuwirth was always injury prone, but he killed Neuwirth. He just doesn't have confidence even when he is playing. Brian Elliott's now hurt and could possibly be out for the season because he kept on running back to him. Of course, he didn't really have a choice with Brian Elliott because he was our best option. And then he just recently hurt Stolarz because he just keeps playing goalies in back-to-back situations and running them dead.
Hold Neuwirth over Haxall's head because I think he was injury-prone for his whole career. It's gotten worse, but like I would have expected it to. But you can like directly contribute Brian Elliott's injury to Dave Haxtell. Like Brian Elliott was last year, he started off, he was pretty good, and he was Drew, he was an average goalie coming in, maybe even above average. And the Flyers were, you know, kind of
thank you
looking smart for signing him. And then Haxtell started him for every single game in the month of December. And shortly after that, he gets a core injury and he hasn't recovered from it yet.
What? How old was Elliott when we signed him? Because, I mean, when we did get him, it was like, wow, this is a pretty good Band-Aid for now.
He's in his 30s. Yeah,
he was in his 30s. I'll
so
let
you
know
get a guy who's in his 30s, a little, I think he's definitely closer to 35 than 30, who's injury-prone and you're just riding him for an entire month?
Yeah, it makes no sense.
What do you think's going to come of that?
Well, I heard, I was listening to another podcast, and I'm just going to go out on a limb here and say it was Broad Street Hockey, because I feel like that's always the one I'm listening to. But they were saying how it was like, probably because he was a college coach, and in college, that's what you do, but because you only played on the weekends. So, like, you have a whole week to recover, and, like, his instinct was to just play the hot goalie. But, like, you can't do that in the NHL because you're playing too many games.
I would love to sit down and talk to someone who really knows a bit more about his time in North Dakota, just to kind of get a feel of like the vibe he brought there, some of the more decision-making things with individual players. Just, I just want to understand how this guy came to be how he was for us and where like things just completely 360'd with, I mean, he had pretty good success there and not here.
Yeah, so real quick, Brian Elliott is now 33. He's going to be turning 34 on April 9th, so we got him when he was 32. Yeah, okay. And then the touch on Haxtell and his time in North Dakota, the thing about the time in North Dakota is they were always up there, but they were never good in any kind of competitive setting in terms of, like, the Frozen Four.
No, didn't they go to the Frozen Four a bunch of times, Drew?
They went to it, but they never did it.
Okay, so it's like us making the playoffs and then winning 33% of the games.
Right, but he did go to one Frozen Four, or the one national championship.
Yeah, well, I think it's hard to get to the Frozen Four, though, like, right? Yeah, so
it is.
I mean, he was a very successful college coach, but
yeah, I'm just being negative.
College
at this
doesn't
point.
Necessarily. College doesn't necessarily translate into.
No, it doesn't.
And the pros. There's my
words. And I still am not sure, like, it's going to be kind of impossible to ever know if, like, Haxtell's systems were good. Because he didn't use his best players for his systems. And then, like, he clearly lost the room. So, you know, maybe his systems were good, but they just weren't being executed. But everything else... Yep. Was bad. His timeout usage, he never called a timeout when he needed to call a timeout. He never won a challenge. Like, I really would love to see the stats on his challenge success rate, because I'm pretty sure in the entirety of his 10 years as a Flyers coach, he may have won two or three. And I mean, there was that one famous one with the Nashville game last year that pretty much cost the game, and he challenged the offsides. So he never called a timeout when the team, like, clearly needed one. That was, like, a big breath of fresh air against Nashville the other night when Scott Gordon calls the timeout early in the game. When it, like, you know, it was obvious. Dave Haxtell probably wouldn't have called that timeout. So, as we talked about it before, like, his player usage was bad. So, there's a lot of other things that are bad.
Some of the most immediate things with Gordon has just been the little things that any couch coach would have done. Compared to Haxtell, and it's just been such a breath of fresh air.
I like that couch coach.
No, and I like that a lot too. Yeah, no, that's all great points. And the other thing that happened amidst all this coaching stuff is the savior got called up to the NHL, Carter Hart, and he started two games, and he's played very well. Carter Hart, welcome to the NHL, my friend.
Oh, my gosh.
You guys' thoughts on young Carter?
For me, I think there were two types of people when it came to Carter Hart. and the whole goaltending situation going into this season. And it was like either you didn't think he was ready talent-wise, or like if you were like me, you didn't just want him behind the dumpster fire, which was how we played under Dave Hextall.
Yeah. So
it was just an awkward situation where it's like, do you want to throw this kid into the fire where you have Andrew McDonald sliding on his stomach on 2-on-1? Or do you just kind of let him go? And I mean, I think we're letting him go right now, but the spark within the team that we've been seeing these past two games is not the team he would have played behind earlier in the season.
True. True. Yeah, right. I don't – like, the Flyers had really bad goaltending numbers this year. But, like, that's clearly not just because of the goalies. So it would have been a terrible situation for him. Like, if he would have started in October under Dave Hextall, he probably would have failed.
He would have
failed. And then we would have been thinking, like, oh, no, we broke him, which I still think is ridiculous. But so, I mean, what Joe was saying, there's, like, two schools of people. There's another school of people who were so terrified to play him before he was ready because of the fear that, like, if he's not ready, you'll ruin him and he'll never be good. And I don't know. I felt like that was extremely overblown. Like, I knew, like, his first game up was probably going to be shaky. He's, you know, 20 years old and he's a rookie. He's going to be nervous. But, like, you know, he still did good. And then he looked a lot better in his second game. So I feel like a lot of people's fears can be, like, calmed down now. And we can just, like, see this kid develop and play. Like, I don't think he'll be up the whole year unless he takes the job.
I think there's going to be – I mean, he's 20 years old. There's going to be some growing pains at some point. And that's okay. And that's going to be perfectly fine. And I think I was talking to our buddy Jordan about this before the Detroit game. And I said, if I'm Gordon, I'm going up the heart. And I said, you have no pressure this game. We're not in a playoff position. We're not competing for anything right now. Go out there, play your game, adapt to the speed, and just go out there and learn.
The biggest thing for Flyers fans is going to be when this kid inevitably has a bad game, you just got to chill. Like, it's not going to
support him. It's support him.
Yeah, it's not going to be the end of the world because, like, even the best goalies in the league now will have a bad game. Like, Devin Dubnyk and Bob Bobrovsky both had terrible stretches this year, but no one's questioning whether they're still a great goalie. Like, it happens. This is going to happen. Right. So when it happens, and it will, just relax. Like, it's okay. He'll get out of it. I do want to say one thing. So, like, I think it's funny that he has a sports psychologist and, like, he talks about him a lot, because the only way a goalie could ever succeed in Philly is if he literally had his own personal psychologist.
Yeah. Goalies and quarterbacks. Welcome to Philly.
Yeah.
So again, we had Ryan, our buddy, Ryan, our co-host Ryan, to record a little thing. So this time it's a shorter one. So, you know, you won't get totally plastered. Have your drink game. Every time he says have a drink of something fun.
Unless you're driving.
So, we're under the age of
21. Yeah, if you're under 21, it's illegal, and we don't support illegal activity.
We do not advocate illegal activity.
Here's a brief message from our lawyer.
So, actually, here's a brief message from Ryan.
I mean, he looked, I think, as good as you could have looked for starting your first two NHL games is at 20 years old. I mean, he played phenomenally. Oh my God, that's embarrassing. But yeah, he looked extremely well. His positioning, I think, was his best, the best aspect of his game. I think a couple of years ago, some of the beat writers, when they were at training camp, had said that he wasn't the most athletic goalie they saw, but his positioning made up for it ten times over. And I think that really showed over the last two games. And, you know, that was from camp 2 years ago, so I'm sure he's a lot more athletic than what they saw in training camp. But the fact that he doesn't have to rely on being Jonathan Quick, making super athletic stops, that he can just make normal stops because he's positioned so well, especially at 20 years old, is a real testament to how good he's going to be. And I mean, obviously the team played really well in front of him. I think the past two games, they gave him a chance to win, and he gave, but he also gave them a chance to win. It wasn't like they he was giving up deflating goals like some of the other goaltenders were doing. You know, a shot from a bad angle flips in, and suddenly the momentum changes. Carter Hart, the only goals he gave up, I mean, he gave up, what, three in the past two games, and one of them he was completely screened on. The other one was just a lucky bounce in a wide-open net. That was last night's game. And then the other one was just, like, a weird one-timer in front that maybe he could have stopped, but it was a prime, you know, prime shot in the slot, so you can't fault him too much for that one. But he's given them every chance to win, and in turn the Flyers have responded and won those games. So, I think he looks good. I think if he keeps playing this well, he could be the starter the rest of the year. But I also hope that Scott Gordon doesn't run him into the ground like Dave Haxtell did his goalies. And I guess we'll see that this weekend. Carter Hart, I think, is getting the start tomorrow against Columbus. And then I would hope Neuwirth gets the start on Sunday against the Rangers. Because this back-to-back shape where you're playing the same goalie in back-to-back games has to stop. So, yeah, but I like what I've seen from him, and I hope he sticks around for the rest of the year and then forever, and he never retires.
All right, thanks, Ryan. What do you guys think about Ryan said about Carter? Kind of just reiterated everything that we've said. That's basically
we should have played Kush first. In hindsight,
yeah.
Do you want to run that back though? What do you think about Ryan?
Nah. Nah, we're fine. Let's move on, because I think we've covered Hart. We'll get to him in a little bit, too, because, guys, we have some games to review. Now, we're going to do a little bit differently, because we got some important games we want to talk about. So I'm just going to really say some scores real quick. So from where we last left off, we're going to start at home against Ottawa, where we lost 4-3. And then we traveled to Pittsburgh, won 4-2. And then we were home against Columbus, lost in overtime 4-3. Traveled to Buffalo, won 6-2 in a pretty good game, I might add. Went to Winnipeg and lost 7-1. And now the games we're going to talk about, ladies and gentlemen. Starting at Calgary.
Gosh.
And boy, oh boy.
That was the night.
This is most likely the night where higher-ups went.
That night was a symbolic display of everything that the Hextall era was. Andy McDonald played 22 minutes, and we lost in what? When were the last two goals scored?
Well, we'll get to that, Joe. Hang on. Because we did lose in overtime 6-5. The Flyers' goal scored by Travis Sanheim, JVR, Couturier twice, Dale Weiss. And then for the Flames, Bennett, Giordano, Monahan, Anderson, Monahan again, and then Goudreau with the overtime winner. Solars had 35 saves on 41 shots. We had a 5-1 lead. Guess what's how much time was left? 1:08 freaking seconds.
Oh, wait, what did you say?
1:08. I didn't say the F. I'm trying
to score wrong, I think.
We had a 5-3
I thought you said 5-1. Maybe
I heard 5-1.
Yeah, you said
no,
5-1.
I heard 5-1.
It wasn't my bad. Well, it was 5-3. Three. Three. And then we gave up two goals in the last 1:08, including the last one, which was 7 seconds to go in the third period. And then we would lose in overtime in a swift 35 seconds.
Which was a theme this year.
Yeah.
Quick overtime. Yes.
Yeah, like Joe was saying, this was kind of just like a little mini, like, microcosm of Hextall's entire tenure. Like, McDonald played 22 minutes. The Flyers took a ton of penalties randomly in the middle of the third period. Killed them all off, though, which was weird.
Yeah.
And then you have a two-goal lead. And guess who he puts out there? 1:30 left.
Yuri Lehtera.
No, I think it was Weiss.
No, it was Weiss because Lehtera
wasn't this game where, I mean, right before that end of the third period goal to send it to OT, there was like a line change with like 20 seconds left, and it was like him forcing Dale Weiss onto the ice, and it's like,
yeah,
come on.
The last goal, the tying goal, is like literally Dale Weiss gets picked apart. And, like, it's just, like, flying around. Like, he's like trying to, like, sporadically skating towards a guy with the puck. The pass goes right through his skates. Like, wasn't even close to, like, playing any kind of good defense. And shortly later, there's a goal scored. Oh, and I forget. I don't remember if this was the tying goal or the goal right before the tying goal. But this made me – I was furious because I always watch the post game kind of like just to get mad because I hate what they say. But they're picking apart Ivan Provorov because there's a moment where he's behind net and in front of him is five Calgary Flames and three Flyers, right? It's just like a mass of bodies. Behind him is a corner where there's only one person, and it's Andrew McDonald. And he drops the pass back to Amac, who isn't ready for it and misses it. The puck goes up the boards, and Calgary gets it, and they score. And they're sitting there talking about how, like, Ivan Provorov, you should never reverse the puck. Never reverse the puck. Up and out. Well, up and out would have been an icing. So Provorov made the smart decision to pass it to a wide-open teammate, but his smart veteran teammate wasn't prepared for a pass.
Yeah, really, the only flaw in the play was that the teammate he passed it to was Andrew McDonald.
Yeah.
Yeah, and that was on the Anderson goal, so it would have been the fourth goal
right.
for Calgary.
And that was – so both goals, both of Hakstol's pets blew it, and they lost the game because of it.
I would also – like to point out that the Flyers were outshot 41-19 in that game.
Well, that's probably because they took 25 penalties, right?
They took
yeah,
six.
But they were all in the third period. Yeah.
And they gave up one power play goal. They took 1, 2, 3, 4 penalties in the fourth.
Yeah, they were like back to back, weren't they? Simmons.
The last
I think
three.
Scott Laughton took a really stupid one. Simmons took a really stupid one.
Holding. Simmons was early in the period.
Yeah, he like just like punched a guy in the face. And then Scott Laughton like chased the guy down to cross check him,
hold him, just hold. Raffle with a hold on Gostin.
Yeah, slash. It was just it was bad. And then the overtime wasn't good either.
It was embarrassing. It was just embarrassing, flat out embarrassing.
Yeah, that's definitely what killed him. That's what got him fired. Like, yep. I guarantee you the Flyers made the decision that night. And they're like, all right, when we get home, he's done.
Yeah.
On the plane.
The only positive coming from that game is that it happened and we've moved on, started a fresh chapter, and that's it. That's all.
Yeah. And it took a little bit for the Flyers to move on because two nights later we went to Edmonton and we lost 4-1. And we lost very quickly because Chiasson scored one in the first, and we gave up two in the second. Couturier got one back in the third. And then McDavid with the empty netter, I believe it was, late in the third. So goal scored for the Flyers, Couturier, Edmonton, Chiasson, McDavid twice, and Adam Larson with his first of the year, I might add. Stellars had 18 saves
on
21 shots.
I'll be honest with you. I watched like the first period, and I was like, screw this, I'm going to bed. And I went to bed.
That was me
as
well.
As you should.
I think it is interesting to note that – Hextall probably knew this was his last game, and he played.
Well, he had one more.
Wait, was it? Oh, yeah. Okay, so never mind then. I'll reserve this comment.
No,
for
it's
the next
game. Yes, because I know what you're talking about. Flyers outshot the Oilers 32-22. That game, Flyers were 0-for-5 on the power play, and they were 1-for-4 the night before. Keep that in mind because we're going to talk about a little bit about the power play and their struggles. So after that, I believe it was the next night in Vancouver, we're going to start Stolarz again. That's key to remember because we lost 5-1. We gave up the first three goals in the first 11 minutes and 12 seconds of the first period. We would go on to lose 5-1. Lawton was the lone scorer for the Flyers. Tanev, Eriksson, Levo, Bozer, and Granlund, the scorers for Vancouver. Stolarz, a whopping 2 saves on 4 shots, and Lyon with 17 on 19.
So,
after that.
First of all, what the hell was wrong with Hakstol this season with the back-to-backs? He did this every back-to-back.
He
played the same goalie twice. And he did it with Picard, and he did it with Stolarz.
And it's not even like they're – I think the Picard one, he was coming off a good game, but Stolarz wasn't coming off a good game.
Yeah, why are you going to throw him back to the Wolves if he just got peppered the night before?
And he's only played 9 games in 2 years.
He played, a third of his NHL games in like a weekend?
Yeah. So, like, what the hell? Like, what were you thinking? What did you think was going to happen? Do you not understand? Like, this is a known thing that goalies don't perform well in the second game of back-to-back.
I would like to make a note that Stolarz wasn't pulled because of his poor play. He was pulled because he got hurt.
Which is another thing. You don't play goalies in a back-to-back because they can get hurt. They're fatigued.
Right. Every now and then, you will, like, if you're making a playoff push, it's late in the season, you're going to start your number one guy. It's going to happen.
But, like, you got to understand, like,
but
a goalie's
most of the
playing
time,
the whole
in the
game,
middle of the season.
It's not like he's a center and he's playing 20 minutes.
You're not going to have Lundqvist playing back-to-back nights at this time of year, especially in the position that the Flyers
are. No, it's ridiculous. And, like, it's his fault that Stolarz got hurt. That was his parting gift.
Yep, 100%.
Oh, we have two 100%. Injured goalies. Let me just ride this kid into the ground next. You're welcome.
Yeah. And Hakstol made sure that he got his boys, Yuri Laterra, Dale Weiss, back in the lineup with
one last
McDonald
thing about the goalies.
And made sure that Oscar Lindblom and Phil Veroni sat.
I also don't understand. It's not like Anthony Stolarz was, like, way better than what Alex Lyon had been doing either. So they're pretty much the same goalie at this point, are they not?
Yeah, I mean,
right now
there might be
stands,
a little more upside with Stolarz, but as far as right now, they're the same.
It's not like it was the difference between, like, Carey Price and James Reimer. It was
no.
Yeah, so it was inexplicable. But then, yeah, you're right. Then he turns around. He also plays his other favorite player, Jory Laterra.
I think him and Yuri might have a little connection with the snow. You know what I'm saying? That might be.
Well, what's interesting that you mentioned that, Joe, is because as soon as Dave got fired, news broke that Jory is he needs to go to court back in his
So is he not with the team anymore? Is he like in Finland?
I don't know. That's all I've heard is he's due in court for the prosecution.
Jeez, dude, what are you doing? You make way more money than you deserve, and you're gonna do a little cocaine racket on the side.
Yeah, that's the strangest thing to me.
He's one of 22 people.
I
being
was gonna say
it had to be
kind of like a situation you see in the NFL a lot, where these guys, their buddies, are just living at their house or something and just doing shady shit out of it. But I mean, who knows?
It's his
we'll
brother,
Dory
Laterra.
Okay.
No, I'm just kidding. I just made up a name. Okay. I'm not even sure if Yuri is. Is Yuri another? I just changed.
Yuri is Laterra's name.
Oh, God.
No, it's Yuri.
Jory, Corey.
Whatever.
I don't know. They're selling drugs.
they all have the same name.
Exactly.
They're all Yuri's.
So after that Vancouver game, that's where all the flight stuff happened, the firing the day after, blah, blah, blah. So we start anew on Tuesday at home against Detroit.
What a day it was.
The Carter Hart and Scott Gordon era begins. Flyers win 3-2. Goal scored by JVR, Gudas, and Gostisbehere. Detroit's goal scored by Cholowski and Jacob De La Rose. Carter Hart, 20 saves on 22 shots. The savior
dude, his dad pacing around the stadium that night warmed my heart.
It was me.
So I kind of feel a little bummed out because I was actually at the game. So, like, I didn't get to see all that stuff going down with the parents and everything. So I guess they were, like, talking about
it
during the podcast and everything.
Yeah.
It was a tearjerker.
It was awesome.
But, hey, I feel that game was the first Flyers game
I've
been to in years. In years. Where it was just, like, just pure fun. First of all,
I was going to ask you, since you were there, like, how was the vibe in the stadium compared to, like, games early in the year that you hit?
So, for one, there was people there. So, that was interesting. And it was definitely like a nervous atmosphere. It kind of felt like a big game, like a game where like the Flyers have to win to like make the playoffs or something. But weird because they're nowhere near playoff contention. But like you could just tell that everyone was nervous about the kid. Like no one wanted him to get shelled. And it was just like a slow, very little cheers. It was just kind of tense. But like every time, like he makes his first save and it's just like a harmless shot. Like harmless, and everyone just went nuts. So like, whoa, yeah! So like, it was like that.
Hey, get stopped!
That's like one of my biggest criticisms about the NBC Philadelphia broadcast is like you can't hear the crowd even when they're loud. So like I'll go back and watch games I was at. And it's like I can't even hear anybody. But like, yeah. So the crowd was like into it, which was exciting because I think I complained on this podcast about the atmosphere at the Flyers games has been kind of dead. But yeah. So they were into it. It was exciting. Yeah. And the Flyers won, too. So that helped.
The Flyers did win. They won a close game, which is we're going to talk about that after the next one. But, Joe, anything else to add for the Red Wings?
Really, I just think the main takeaway is, again, just those little tweaks that everyone with eyeballs and a pulse wanted to be made during Hextall's time here that Gordon came in and just did. And look what happened. They grinded out a tight win against the Red Wings team that they're playing pretty well this year, right? I mean, like, nothing crazy, but...
No. But it didn't matter what the opponent was, because the Flyers were finding a way to lose all games.
They're essentially in the same boat as the Flyers right now. And then the other thing to note about that game is Travis Sanheim is finally getting his playing time. 21 minutes, 6 seconds of ice time, second only to Provorov at 24:36, because Provorov just does literally everything.
Big facts. I wanted to just touch on what Joe was saying about like the little touches Scott Gordon's doing. I don't know if this is Scott Gordon or if this is just like the nature of like having a new coach, but like the Flyers seem like they're pushing the puck up and they're way more decisive with the puck. Like, I can't tell you how many times this year I've been watching a game where the Flyers, they get the puck in their own zone and they go to breakout and then they stop their own breakout and head back towards the goalie. And they didn't do that. They actually like broke out and moved the puck up and got into the offensive zone. So it was refreshing to see.
I just lost my point. Oh, it's like the players actually play.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah,
for sure, bench. For sure.
But I also think they got some confidence, because, a little bit of swag back, if that makes sense. But
Yeah, because under Hextall, it just felt like nobody wanted to play for Dave Hextall.
Who would want to play for that guy's smug, meaningless, just no emotion? I just feel like his face... His face screams like he looks down on everyone he's ever spoken to.
You know what?
But Joe... He waked
up. Oh, shit.
So.
I didn't know that.
This is. I draw a lot of parallels to how I felt about Scott. John Stevens when he was the coach. And it was like kind of the same thing. Like, I really hate coaches that never, ever show any emotion. Like, I understand that, like, sometimes, like, a guy like John Tortorella or, like, LaViolette, like, they actually do more harm than good when they get all emotional like that. But, like, sometimes it's necessary. And you know what? If Hextall would have like lost his shit a few times on the bench, I think he would have gave himself a much longer leash with the fans.
Yeah, show you at least trying something. And I think one big thing with Gordon that I've noticed just from the last two games, Nashville and Detroit, it's his presence on the bench. I see a lot of clapping. I see a lot of individual conversations he's having with players. And overall, he just seems so much more involved during the game.
Yeah, it was something that Devin, you actually texted in our pod group, and you said, "Did he just talk to one of the players?"
Yeah, exactly.
In the middle of a game, like, and it's very good to see. So we move on. Sorry for the cough; I have a little scratch in my throat. there we go. So we move on to Nashville Thursday night. It's a 2-1 win. Goal scorers Voracek and Claude Giroux, but Nick Bonino for Nashville. Carter Hart.
Carter Hart.
31 saves on 32 shots. The story of that game, besides Carter Hart, it's us versus the rest.
Oh, my gosh. I think you made a great point, Devin, last night about how the refs may have had a little vendetta after that Provorov situation.
Yeah, that has to be.
Real quick, because... And I'm actually touching on the Provorov situation here. Not that the ref should be biased, like I said last night, is that Provorov actually felt horrible about that and called the ref and apologized.
Yeah, because he's a good guy. It was heat of the moment, but still.
He said he couldn't sleep last night because of that.
I think probably because he knew that was the reason why we got 25 penalties after it.
For sure.
Also, he's just wise beyond his years and is a really nice guy, and I kind of just want to be
He's a legend. But I mean, like, no matter what sport you play, you know that the pettiest creatures on earth are referees. So the second you give them a reason to not like you, they allow someone on your team to almost have their career ended by a boarding hit and not call it.
Yeah, and the explanation like the ref gave to the Flyers was like, oh, he braced himself.
That's not even the rule.
And it's like,
that's not even the rule.
What?
So the hit we're talking about is the hit on Couturier late in the third period where he got boarded. The ref said, well, you braced yourself. But the letter of the law is if you're hit between the numbers with facing the boards, it's boarding. It doesn't matter if you're ready for it.
Doesn't make any sense. So there was the Couturier boarding that wasn't called. Voracek was tripped. And then
Simmons got held, and then right after that, they called a trip on us.
Yeah, and then Adrian McDonald got called for a high stick where he, like, I don't even know if he hit the guy in the head. I think he hit him in the chest. And so, I don't even like to defend Andrew McDonald. But, yeah, so it was just, like, terrible. I can't believe we didn't get a make-up call or anything. So, like, it has to be there was a little bit of, like, punishment going on there.
There was some bias. There was
the Flyers killed them all off.
Yeah. They were 6-for-6 on the penalty kill, and then 0-4 on the power play.
But they
killed
a two-minute-long 5-on-3.
They did. And Carter Hart made a great save after a broken stick one-timer. Well, the one-timer came after the broken stick.
Robert Haig, too. I mean, talk about him using those that uptick in minutes in a positive way. He really showed up against Calgary.
Yeah. So the big thing with that Provorov touching the ref is he sat for 12 minutes.
Yeah.
Because of the so the ice time leaders for the Flyers defense were Sanheim at 21:58 and Robert Haig
right.
at 20:59.
Because Provorov and Andrew McDonald were in the box for that 5-on-3. Right. So
right.
They only had who was out there? Was Hagen Gudas? No, Hagen. Yeah. Was it Hagen Gudas?
Gudas and Sanheim. They had the most shorthanded time.
Yeah, but the 5-on-3.
Haig had 6 minutes and 14 seconds.
I'm pretty sure the 5-on-3 was Kutz, Haig, and Sanheim, and they played the most textbook 5-on-3 penalty kill I've ever seen. Really, like the Predators, they're a good team. Like they're were missing PK Subban. Like I understand,
they're slumping right now, but they're still second best for the President's Trophy. At least
they didn't have an option. On that 5-on-3, and it's because one, the penalty kill did great, and two, Carter Hart did great. Like there wasn't any shots, but like a big reason for there not being too many shots is every time they set up a play, that player would look up, and Carter Hart was there. So there's no shot. So you pass it again.
Sorry, it wasn't for the President's Trophy. They're 2 points behind the West leader right now.
But yeah, so and Haig was blocking shots, but he also. Couple times just like laid down in the slot and prevented the Predators from like making a pass.
Anything.
Like it was pretty ballsy, I'm not gonna lie. But
yeah, he really like put it all out there, and I just think as far as the overall spark that we've seen these last two games, he's someone who is taking this positivity in stride, and I love it.
He's a guy that I wasn't really like high on. And I have to say this year, even like through all the crap the Flyers were going through in the beginning of the year, I really actually was kind of impressed with them. And I can't wait to see what him under a different coach.
Yeah, no, I like Mr. Haig. It was good survivability late for the Flyers there, against the odds with the penalties late. But then, because what was the last penalty called against the Flyers?
I think it was a trip.
Just over 2 minutes left. Yeah, 17:15 for the hook. Like it was a trip, but it ruled it as a hook, from Raffle. But it was definitely a trip on Ryan Ellis.
That was actually a penalty and whatever, but, you know.
Yeah. And Nashville pulled the goalie, so it was a 6-on-4 during that entire time. And the Flyers killed it off, survived, and thank you, Mr. Post.
Yes.
With point, like, 6 seconds left on
Ryan Johansson. Yeah, he took that shot, scumbag.
Hart was there, though.
Carter Hart was there.
Played the angle.
God.
Get, it's all he had. I'm kind of
stuck on the boarding hit by Johansson still. And I love Wayne Simmons immediately took a run at him, but I need Wayne to just like jump that guy after that, to be honest.
Especially after he was such an idiot, like the last couple games where he was like taking stupid, like aggression.
Yeah, dude. This was the time.
It's like actually kick that guy's ass.
Yeah. Oh my gosh. And it sucks because Johansson's such a big body guy. He just like ate that hit and just they went about their day.
Yeah. That was, I mean, we would have been shorthanded for it. I understand. But like,
dude, but it,
and I think that's
you gotta
why
police
he
the game yourself if, sometimes. I don't know.
Yeah, but late in the game,
it was a smart play, but emotionally, Drew, I would have loved to see Wayne Simmons kick his ass.
Oh, I was upset.
Just beat the crap out of his face.
Yeah. So the Flyers points leaders. So how many games have we played? Jesus, I don't even actually know our record. Scramble. 33 games. There it is. Claude Giroux, 41 points. Voracek, 26. Kateri has 25. And goals, Kateri has 13. Giroux has 12. Simmons has 10. And assists, Giroux has 29. Voracek has 17. And Kutz and TK tie for third for 12. Carter Hart in his two games of a 1.50 goals against average and a 9.44.
Oh,
saves.
What a time to be alive. God, that makes me happy.
Giroux is still on pace for over 100 points.
Love that.
Do we?
Oh, also, one big thing that I think may have been overlooked in the Nashville game, Giroux had, like, 10 shots. And I think, as far as, like, you were saying, it's like, wow, Claude Giroux shot the puck on a 2-on-1. He really is, as the captain and a leader, going out and trying to get points for, like, that young goalie behind him. And I love the hunger he's been showing.
It's been a theme this year that Giroux is shooting on a 2-on-1. And it's kind of refreshing because I think he realizes, like, this pass never works. No one ever receives this perfectly beautiful pass I give them, so I'm just going to shoot.
Yeah, and then Drew's on pace for 101
points. So 102
points right now. So
which is what he got last year, right?
102 points. He had.
That's exactly what he had last year.
Yeah.
Do we have? So. You said the goals leaders. Do we only have three guys in the double digits for goals?
Let me check. Yes. The next closest are TK and Voracek.
My response to that, and you guys know me pretty well, so you'll know where I'm coming from. Get Jeff Skinner. Get Jeff Skinner. Get Jeff Skinner.
It's too late.
Could have got him now.
He's on a 1 year there, right? They have to re-sign him again. He's going shopping, I think.
Yeah.
No,
but
next
right
year,
now,
get Jeff Skinner. Get Jeff Skinner.
Well, I will say this. JVR was hurt for a huge stretch of time.
That is,
And I think
he's only played 17
of the
33.
And I think if he never got hurt, because, like, he got hurt, he came back, he clearly wasn't 100%, and he was also playing on a terrible line. He's been playing on the top two lines lately, and he's starting to score. So I think if he would have played the full season under, with good line mates, that he probably would be in the double digits.
What was his pairing last night? Who was he out there with? Because I
think Giroux and Konechny.
Okay. Because I would love, I mean, if you look at guys that have succeeded on our teams with Giroux. So, I mean, if you insert him into, like, a Giroux-Jake line, my heart would be full.
If you kind of think about it, if you did Giroux as the center with Jake and JVR, that's really similar to those really good lines of, like, Giroux, Voracek, and Jágr.
Yeah,
and,
or, like, Jágr,
Hartnell. Yeah. Like,
JVR can do that Hartnell role, no doubt.
Exactly. So I would love to see that, really. But I kind of like spreading it out a little bit, too.
Yeah.
But,
and, I mean, Giroux, you got to keep him on the wing these past two seasons. The points, you got to leave it.
Well, he played center last night.
Whatever works.
You know what? Giroux as a center is great. Like, he's a great center. I think we kind of forgot how good he was at center because he had those two bad years where he was clearly injured. And then, like, it just so happened to be the year that he was healthy was the year they put him on the wing and he, like, took off. Like, I wouldn't have been surprised if he had a similar season last year if he was at center. But the reason for moving him to the wing wasn't because he was playing poorly as a center. It was more also Hextall's idea, not Hextall's idea. We found that out. But was to preserve Giroux for, his contract because, like, playing center's tougher on you. It's a harder position to play. So it's more of, like, how can we make Giroux last well into his 30s? Let's give him a easier workload. So, like, if you split it up, you know, a couple games he plays center, sometimes he plays wing, or even, like, you split it up during a game, like, I think that'll work.
Yeah. And, I mean, if Couturier is going to keep being an offensive force, like, it'll be nice to not have to force G to be there.
Yeah.
But, yeah.
Yeah, and if Couturier can perform without Giroux on his line,
you know what else?
That's even bigger. That's even bigger.
They could do, and I don't know why hockey teams don't do this. They do it in basketball. Like, why don't you just give him games off? Like, I know, like, it'd probably be really hard to convince him to do that, but just, especially this year, if they don't, like, turn it around and they can't get back into playoff race, which I think they can, but it'll be tough. Like, you know, maybe the second game of back-to-back when you're playing the Rangers, maybe you don't need Giroux. Maybe give, like, a young guy a chance.
A little Frost action?
Yeah. Well, it can't be Frost. But with that idea in mind, like, just make him play 70 games instead of 82.
Yeah, but then he's not going to get
that's fine, but, like, you still know that he could have gotten there. Like,
I know. Yeah. So I think we're running out of time.
All right.
Yeah, because we're getting up there, especially with the Kush talk. So, gentlemen, thank you guys for joining. Thank you everybody for listening today. Let's send all of these good vibes to Carter and see if he can be the guy. And he might not be here the entire year, but we'll see. If he keeps playing as well as he is, he might just earn that job. So yeah, again, thank you all for listening. You can follow myself on Twitter at TheBigDrew92. You can follow Devin at DevinS93. You can follow Ryan, who's not here, at FlyWalker1975. Jared, do you want me to plug your...
It's all right, but thanks for having me on. I just love the fact that we ran a little bit over on time is just because there's a lot of positive things happening right now, and it's more fun to be happy than hate our lives under Dave Haxtell.
Fully. You can follow the podcast at @wiz_wit_hockey. Questions, comments, send us an email at wizwithockey@gmail.com. We did not get any, so we didn't forget any, like we did last time with Paulie's. But yeah, thank you all for listening. Ryan's not here, but I'm sure he gives a sentence. I've been Drew.
He's been Devin. Yeah, everyone, just be happy and enjoy some hockey now.
Yeah, and he's been our guest, Joe. Yeah,
again, thank you, and Carter Hart.
Yes, thank you, Joe. Thank you for being here. Carter, y'all Hart, have a good day. Have a happy holidays.
Carter Hart. Carter Hart.